Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, daughter has fun. Yeah, I think we're ready. We already have confirmation we're the best pod in pickleball. From Steve Kuhn himself, the founder of Major League Pickleball, Duper, and Minor League Pickleball. And we're excited to have him here. Welcome, Steve.
It's a pleasure. A pleasure to be with you gentlemen.
So Steve's birthday was last week. Steve, how old are you, if you don't mind put him on the spot?
I tell people I identify as a 28-year-old.
All right, there we go. Well,
In my head, I'm actually probably even younger than that, so...
Steve, happy 28th birthday.
Wow, fantastic.
I actually gave this to Thomas last weekend.
That was mine?
Yeah, but Thomas said, I don't want it unless you're going to sign it. So that's too much work, but I'm giving it to you. It's a brand new Pro XR paddle. It actually launched just today. It's a little bit more of a normal shape because I'm high maintenance and made mine special. This one's normal.
I love anyway, it. Thank you.
Happy 28th.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem. You can put it down or whatever you want to do with it now. You don't have to hold on to it the whole time. All right. So one thing that I'll explain to you is we don't have our board up, but we've been raising money for Stop Alzheimer's Now. If you've watched the show, every time we swear, we donate to those guys. Well, the viewers decided that we're going to add an extra zero behind any of your swear words.
All right. Fair enough.
So, yeah, swear away.
We'll see. We might get there. Depends on how this conversation goes.
We got to get Steve riled up.
We'll see how spicy it gets.
How do we get you riled up enough to swear? What really grinds your gears?
Like, you know, there are certain things I'm fairly passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
We've had our differences, especially with you, with my favorite topic, rally scoring.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's better for the sport. I think it's easier for people to learn. I think it's easier for it to spread to children, for kids to learn, for international. I think it's better for TV viewership. I think it's better for gambling. I think it's better, period. And I know you sometimes push back on that. I listen very carefully to your words, but I think... I think leading the sport towards that will mean there will be more players. There'll be more viewers. I think it's just more kids learning the sport. I think it's just a win for the sport. So if you want to get me all spiced up, let's have a rally scoring debate. that would probably get you some money in the
swear jar.
In the swear jar.
Rally scoring is dumb, Steve. No. Okay. So actually, I've given this some thought. And we've spoken about rally scoring before, and I said the only thing that I dislike about MLP format rally scoring is the fact that there's not switching, right? You don't switch between boxes.
Okay.
And I think I've come up with a way to solve that.
Okay.
So every time you score, you switch boxes.
Yep.
And your team only gets one serve.
Okay.
So I'm serving, I win a point, I continue serving, but switch sides. Every time we score a point, we switch sides and we continue serving.
Yep.
Side out goes to the other team. Side out comes back. Now it's your serve.
Yep.
So we alternate who serves between the two of us.
Yeah.
And that, I think, would solve the switching element
I get
of things.
And I understand how, for the pro game, that may or may not be better. But I'll always take the point. Here's why I've fought back against that, at least so far.
Okay.
Is I want to make the game absolutely simpler for amateurs to learn how to play and new players to play. And one thing that's really complicated for new players is switching sides and stacking. That is a thing that causes a lot of confusion. I think we should be demonstrating a version of the sport that's easiest to learn, that gets most people. And I think the switching, I can understand how maybe for the pro game, maybe it makes sense. I'm open to that conversation, but I think we lose showing how people a very simple version of the sport that I think is very valuable for the sport to have that. So there's a trade-off there.
When do you think we, and I agree, it's slightly more complex, but when do we end up with version of the rules that's different for amateurs and pros?
Look, I'm sure there will be a difference. Another thing I've advocated for, certainly for pros, is at least experimenting with a shot clock. I think it would be. Now, you don't. 4-0s don't need to experiment with the shot clock. 4-0s don't have points that last 50 hits for the most part. Yeah. So I'm putting myself safely in that category. So I'm not showing any shade to anybody. But you know, when there are certain events in the Pro Tour where maybe the bounce is a little bit lower and you can't really attack off the bounce very easily, where the points get awfully long, I think there would be at least it would be interesting to experiment with a shot clock at least at some point.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it would be better. I don't know. Right. Maybe it would be worse. it's a very real possibility. We try it once and it would be like, yeah, it just didn't work.
Right.
It's okay. It's okay to try things once and have them not work.
Yeah, I think experimentation is okay. Yeah. There seems to be this like general trend of if you suggest something, everyone sort of is up in arms. Like, that's going to be stupid. It's like, well,
hey, that's how we get our viewers.
And when you try something, I mean, you can always go back if you realize that it's not the right play.
That is correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So keeping an open mind.
For sure. All right. Well, sorry to derail the agenda immediately. But, Steve, you've been traveling a bunch recently. Like, what have you been up to? Where you been?
I've been all over the map. One of the biggest focuses for myself and for MLP going forward is to try and get more kids playing pickleball, and we have two very serious initiatives to help try and make that happen. One is Pickleball Cares. It's a charity that we'll be talking about more in the weeks to come, so I don't want to step on kind of some future announcements there, but the idea is raising money for that we could use for youth pickleball. But at least as important as that, and maybe in terms of financial leverage, even better than that, is the effort I call it MLPDC. Really funding an effort to get in front of representatives, Congress, various the White House, et cetera, just trying to get some funding for youth pickleball. I think in terms of the cost effectiveness of a sport to make kids happier and healthier and more social, I can't think of any sport that could be better than that, than pickleball. Mm-hmm. We have elementary schools, we have middle schools, we have high schools that have empty gyms right after school. You could put some lines down, some relatively inexpensive temporary nets, and we could be doing pickleball in every school in America. And I think we could really make a lot of kids' lives happier. Mm-hmm. And the cost of this is minimal. We already have the gyms. I'm sure we could get most of the equipment. We could probably get wonderful sponsors to either make it very low price or practically free. We could do this for millions and millions of kids. And not only would that be great for the kids, it would be great for the country. It obviously would be great for the sport, too. This is a very strange sport, pickleball, in so many ways. But one way I've described the strangeness is I said this is the Benjamin Button of sports. it was old. It is getting younger. Mm-hmm. But it's really weird. We have like an invert. Most sports you play when you're a kid, and you don't play as much when you're older.
Right.
We are exactly the opposite. But we need to change that. We need to build up a base of young people playing, and we need to be in every community in America. We need to, and this is something that's easy to do in every community in America. We could do this in New York City. We can do this in Detroit. We can do this in every city in America, and it's just not that hard. We just need a little bit of political leadership on this, and we're already having meetings. We're already having meetings with we had meetings yesterday with two senators and a member of the House in D.C. So I've spent some time in D.C. before, and I'm comfortable with that world. This should be easy. Mm-hmm. Here's another thing that I've argued is, if you'd have went to the federal government kind of and said, we're going to create something that's going to get 30 to 40 million Americans out moving, exercising, getting to know each other, having a better, happier and more healthful life, and it's only going to cost $100 billion, it would have said, well, that's a bargain. That's the benefits that I think pickleball is delivering to America right now. With a little bit of help from our friends in D.C., I think we can greatly accelerate that. So we're planning to fund our efforts in D.C. for the next 2 years at about $1 million. And I've challenged our team in DC to get at least $1 billion in funding. So I call it the Million for Billion Project.
That's a good ROI.
You're good at names of these projects.
Names.
Yeah.
I'm good at names.
Yeah. If nothing else, yeah.
Hopefully, I've told our DC team that's the standard. Mm. They better deliver at least $1 billion in funding for us in the next 2 years, or they failed. And
to be clear, you're not talking about the DC pickleball team. You're talking about you've hired.
I'm talking about the team of lobbyists, team of people that we have working this on the Hill.
No, I thought you were talking about the DC team. No, otherwise you're canned. You're done. Yeah. Your team is the
your challenger won. Forever.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it seems like it should be a win. And I think the really cool couple really cool parts about pickleball are that you can bring different generations together. I think that's a big, indicator for success in a kid's life is do you have good role models that are older than you?
Yeah.
If you don't, you might not turn out great. Like if you do, you have a better chance of being a productive member of society. And even something as simple as hitting a wiffle ball around can be, I think, pretty enormous in
absolutely
a young kid's life.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can get our representatives to see that. But yeah.
And by the way, at the appropriate times, I might call upon yourselves and other members of the pickleball community to, pick up a phone and call your representative, call your senator at some point. We don't need it today, but there'll be a day when we're working on something and a few phone calls letting people know that people in the pickleball community care about this, that they value this, and that that funding will not go to waste. It'll deliver a lot of happiness and joy to a lot of people. So I'm preparing you and your audience. There will be a day when I will ask for some help.
We're getting into politics. I like it.
There we go. It's all politics, Thomas. It's politics.
Yeah.
Right. Should have known that.
The other part about pickleball too, right, is it's kind of the great equalizer. So kids who traditionally might be athletic or good at other sports have a better shot at being good at pickleball, being good at something early in their life, building that confidence. And as you said, Zane, then going on because of that to make better decisions with their lives and be a productive member of society. And I know you can get behind that because obviously you're not the best athlete.
This is true. This is true. I was better off as an accountant, but here I am. So you went to an Inter Milan game as well?
I did.
How was that experience?
I would say that was one of the most extreme sporting events I've ever been to. It was AC Milan versus Inter Milan, which is even a regular season Serie A game is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. This was actually the semifinals of the most important competition in Europe called the Champions League.
Yeah.
So these two teams in the same city who fan bases absolutely hate each other.
Right.
To the point of violence at times are playing in the most important game that they probably ever will play against each other. Walking into that stadium, there were times when I was
scared
a little bit.
Wait. So were you wearing the Inter Milan or the AC Milan?
I was trying not to wear any color.
Yeah,
I
was trying. He was wearing nothing. He was naked.
I was trying to be the invisible man. It was the level of intensity of that game. I don't. That was hard to match. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I was there, obviously, to talk to a lot of the biggest thinkers and leaders in world sports were there, and I was there to meet with them and talk about where pickleball could fit in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was working. This was a working mm-hmm. a working trip.
There we go. Any interesting conversations? Anything any lessons learned or what'd you think?
People around the world are definitely intrigued by what's going on in pickleball. Obviously, it have different levels of adoption at different places in the world, but everybody there, it was amazing how many people wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. They're intrigued, and because America is such a, we're so good at exporting culture. We are the world
champ. We're the trend center. Yeah,
we're the world champ of exporting culture, mm-hmm. And so everybody there had their questions. They were interested in what's going on. So there's definitely a lot of interest.
Right, primarily Europe. Do you give any thought? Has there been any progress or interesting conversations about getting pickleball into the Asian market, obviously they have
I think Asia will happen earlier than Europe.
Yeah. I mean, they love table tennis. They love badminton. They love racket sports generally. I think pickleball kind of fits that criteria.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of reasons why I think Asia will likely pop first is because you have an installed base of badminton courts, which are exactly the same size.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Oh, well, that makes sense given the history. Yeah.
Is 6 inches shorter than the
tape. You just put a tape line down.
But the overall, it's 20 by 44, and they have a line that's basically the same thing as the kitchen line, except it's 6 inches closer.
Six and a half feet instead of 7 feet.
Yeah.
So you got to bring a piece of tape down.
Yeah. And that's it.
So you take the badminton net down.
And just lower the net.
You put a pickleball net instead, and you have two pieces of tape, and you are ready. You're ready to go.
Right.
And in places that have a big installed base of badminton courts, this could go very quickly.
Right.
And I think that's more so. There's badminton in Europe, too. And there's badminton in the UK. But Asia is much bigger. So I think that's one thing. And then, you know, padel is an amazing sport. It's fun to play. I've seen you play it.
Yeah. Poorly.
It's fun. And that's going to be. In some sense, it's a very different sport in some ways, but also a competitor to pickleball in some ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's going to be that's why I think adoption in Europe will be a little bit slower than Asia.
Have you talked to these pro padel league guys who are? I mean, they're pretty much replicating the Major League Pickleball model, and they just had their inaugural season, I think, in Miami.
I have not spoken to them yet. I'd love to.
Yeah.
I have, for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened, but I'd be delighted to talk to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting to see, like, the format and everything was very, very similar. I don't think there's a dream breaker, but.
No, I talked to the guy who started it, and he said he was very much looking to Major League Pickleball as inspiration. So
that's badass.
Mm-hmm.
That's badass.
Yeah.
I guess that's two swear words.
There you go.
I don't even think about it anymore. For Steve, not for me. Come on, man.
Okay. Right. Just checking. Make sure we're on the same page here.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I think the overall problem with padel is it's awesome to watch. It is not the same to create, right? It's completely new and different.
Yep.
Court, very expensive to do, maintain, all that stuff. Pickleball, you buy a $100 net, you buy four paddles for $100. And probably comes with some balls. You're all in $200 to get started.
Yep.
So, all right, let's skip here to the, because I think everybody's curious about your perspective on the merger of MLP and Vibe / the PPA. Where does that stand? How are you guys working together? Like for San Clemente coming up, for example, you know, how are you guys working together? What's kind of like the current landscape of that?
Well, that's a good example. We schedule it in the same venue back to back because that saves us some resources in terms of the setup and cameras and all that stuff. So there's an example of how, you know, how we're working together. It is remarkable how long lawyers can take to get things done.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's just, and I mean, there are details that need to be ironed out and it just takes a little while, but I think, you know, the PPA is doing great stuff. I think pickleball in general, the content, the stories, what you guys are doing, what other podcasts are doing, it's all getting better.
Yeah.
It's all getting more fun. Like, and more people are getting into it. And yeah, PPA is part of that. We're a part of that. Yeah, obviously, yeah, we're all, and both of, you know, PPA and MLP are standing on the shoulders of giants. We're standing on the shoulders of what USA Pickleball did for a long time and the APP and everyone else who's really built the sport over years. But we're starting to see that the fruits of that. You know, and yeah, the content the last few weeks in the PPA have been amazing. They've been great matches. The APP match, the singles match was amazing. Like, all these things are good. Like, you know, all these things are bringing more people to play. Yeah, I've tried to make sure that at MLP we're true to our core mission statement is we got to get more people to play this sport.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that, we think we'll be just fine. We'll financially we'll be fine, and. So here's a question I wanted to ask to you guys. So I'm going to surprise you with a question.
Oh, how the tables have turned.
Always on chess.
So here's something I've been thinking about. And by the way, I don't think I've asked anybody else this question yet, but it's been in my head for a little.
Might as well save it for the number one pod.
It's been in my head for a couple of weeks. Is you very kindly say I'm good at naming things. And we had a project initially with MLP was, you know, we called it 40 by 30,
yep.
40 million players by 2030. Depending on how you count it, we may already be there. At least we're certainly, I think, within shouting distance of that. Mm-hmm. So obviously we need to update that one.
We need to shoot bigger.
We need to shoot bigger. So here's the question for you and the pickleball world. How many, so 330 million people in America, how many people in America will play pickleball?
What's play? Define play.
Play, I'd say.
Once a year?
Three times a year. That's someone who plays.
That's a very good question.
I think ultimately everyone who's willing to try it will at some point try it. And then the question is, of those people, first of all, there's those two questions. How many people are willing to try it out of 330 million? And what percentage of them will get the bug?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the two questions to define.
I think more than any other sport, when people do play, they get the bug
right
much quicker. And it's much more likely that they do get the bug and want to get out there again. And
this has got to be a more addicting sport than so think about sports that people do once. Like, what percentage of people do you think only do this once? I think it's extremely low. So to get to three, I think if you play once per year, you're pretty likely to play three times a year.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So if there's 50 million people playing once a year, maybe there's 35 million people playing three times a year.
If that's your answer, I'm more aggressive than you. Not surprisingly.
Yeah, no, right.
That's my brand.
Oh, wow.
I know you're shocked. But yeah. I think ultimately 200 million people will try to play pickleball at least once.
I could see it. I mean,
I think that's believable. And I think 100 million of them will play at least three times a year when we get to steady state, which might take a decade. Mm. I don't think that's crazy.
When do we end up at a billion?
Billion worldwide. That's the other goal. That's the next goal.
That's a real goal, right? One out of eight people playing.
That's also possible.
We've reached one out of eight. Here, if there's 40 million that are playing,
I don't think that's impossible. A billion worldwide is a number that we should be thinking about. How do we get there? By the way, rally scoring helps. So badminton is rally scoring. Badminton didn't used to be. It used to be silo scoring, and they changed to rally scoring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, volleyball used to be changed to rally scoring.
Yeah.
If you look at other countries when they play pickleball, they usually use rally scoring because they're familiar with it with badminton.
Okay, why? Let me ask you this question.
I'm stuck on that one. I can't.
I know you are. So
I can't get past it.
So let me ask this.
You're almost swear jar level. I'm almost ready.
This is like the manifesto of Steve Kuhn is rally scoring is the future. Why do you think, given all of these indicators that it's right for the sport, and your firm stance on why do you think there's been such a resistance to it up to this point?
Tradition is a strong appeal to folks, and I get it. I don't think you're a bad person if you don't use rally scoring. I just think it's better for the sport. And I think as stewards of the sport, the people who are making decisions about what the rules are should thinking as stewards of the sport. I think that would be, that's almost a tautology, but I think that's true. And I think if you look across all the ways that it affects participation, viewership, et cetera, I think the argument for it is quite strong. This is the old the old thing about VHS versus Betamax. Betamax was better, but once something gets installed, sometimes it's hard for something better to win. But we have a chance now. I would ask the leaders in the sport. Like I think this is better for everybody. And if we can act together to change this now, I think it's better for everybody. I think everybody does. The whole sport is better off.
Do you think the PPA will implement it at any point?
It's up to them. We've talked about it with them a number of times, and they've indicated willingness to consider it. And at times I actually thought they were about to, but it hasn't happened yet. So it's their call. But I would, again, I would say the same thing to them. I think it's better for the sport if they did. I think it would be better for the sport if APP did it, if USA Pickleball did it. I'm not shy about that. I'm not hiding it. I'm not doing this anywhere but completely in the open. I think this would be better if everyone could be aligned on that.
What do you think the most compelling argument against rally scoring is? Like, if you're going to frame the argument from the other side.
I mean, you've made some valid points. Like, side switching is, I think, for pros, at least strategically, somewhat interesting.
To be clear, I'm in favor of rally scoring.
Yeah.
But the only nuance being I wish there was more dynamic movement.
The version of rally scoring that we use at MLP, I think there are reasonable criticisms of it that a fair person could have in terms of not side switching. And I give you my response on why I think that's good, because I think it shows the amateur community an easier way to learn how the sport is. So there's value in that. And there's so much value in that that's the way we should do it. It's certainly a fair counter argument that you don't get to change sides. And there's probably something to that, but
I think that if there were two versions of scoring right now, there's two versions of scoring, there's side out and rally. I think that those are further apart than MLP rally scoring and my proposed rally scoring.
Yeah.
I think you could figure out, if you're used to playing MLP style rally scoring, I think you could figure out the way that I've suggested. That's not as big of a switch as it is from side out to rally.
Sure. So, by the way, again, I'm hijacking this whole podcast about rally scoring.
But, go for it.
But if you look at the Real Clear Stats article and you look at information about the difference between rally and traditional, it doesn't really change the odds of who wins. It doesn't change the average length of a match. It changes the volatility of how long a match can be. And the reason that that's important is certainly in weather conditions that are, say, extremely hot or something, or a very long match could become dangerous at some point. Having a more volatile format is probably more likely to lead to injuries, cramps, et cetera. So that's a big negative. But probably a bigger part of it is when people think about this rally versus your traditional, oftentimes they frame it in terms of the pro game. Let's go back to like a 3-5 tournament. Mm-hmm. A 3-5 tournament, it's really the advantage from being the receiver is much bigger because the 3-5s are not good at the third shot drop. So those matches can go at times forever. If you've ever been to a 3-5 tournament with traditional scoring, it can go a long time. And if you look at how the brackets are structured, if one match gets delayed, a bunch of courts are sitting open because you need that match to clear before you can go to the next round.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing in Vuori stuff since my first Major League Pickleball. Actually, the Discovery Warriors, that aren't a team anymore, got me Vuori clothing. And I loved it. I had these sweatpants that just felt buttery. They were so soft. I think this is actually one of the original things that I got from them. Now they got all types of other cool stuff. Got these nice shorts that you can't see me wearing. And super comfy stuff. Actually, all the shorts that I wear when I'm playing are Vuori as well. So I don't even know if they needed to pay us for this. I don't know if they did pay us for this, but I got a couple more Vuori things and I'm happy. So let's go.
No, we are officially sponsored by Vuori. I'm decked out in Vuori stuff. I've got the joggers on right now and a buttery soft shirt. And Vuori, listen, it's not just comfortable. It's an investment in your happiness. How about that for a tagline? For our listeners, they're offering 20% off the first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/thedink. Vuori.com/thedink. And you'll get 20% off your first purchase, and you'll enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. So that's Vuori.com/thedink, and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
So if you look at a double elimination format with traditional scoring, about 30 to 40% of the courts are empty quite often. If you change to rally scoring, it gets much more court efficient. It's and that means that for the same number of matches, your day lasts longer, but lasts shorter. For the same number of matches using rally scoring, your day lasts shorter. It's more pleasurable. It's more fun. That's a big thing. That means that your volunteers don't have to stay as long. All these things are just a pure improvement for the sport. And that's what people have to realize as well, is that that's a meaningful thing. If you've played in a double elimination tournament, you know, sometimes you might wait a couple hours on the back draw, and traditional scoring, it accentuates that. It makes that worse. And that's not true just for pros. It's even more true if you go to the 3-5 and the 4-0 levels. It's more true there. And I think making a better tournament experience for people, rally scoring also does that. And that's a meaningful reason why it's important to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Last
enough. Enough about rally scoring. We're moving on.
Yeah. We're gonna keep going until you say a damn swear word, Steve. I'm already at $30 for today. I'm funding tons of Alzheimer's research right now. All right. So, taking a step back, can we kind of take a walk through Steve Kuhn Pickleball Ventures? What was the start? What were some of the first projects? What are some future projects? Like, let's go one by one here.
So the first time I played, I think, was 2014. I'm almost certain of that. First thing I ever did was help start and fund Greater Austin Pickleball, which we called The Gap, which was an organization helped to try and get more people to play, a nonprofit that I helped launch. So that was one of the first things I did, because I just saw that this was something that was making people's lives better, and I wanted to encourage that. Probably the next, I think that was, I'd guess 2016 is when we started Greater Austin Pickleball. 2018 was probably a notable thing. That's when we hosted a charity event for the Andy Roddick Foundation at my house. Where Roddick and Agassi played for the first time they ever played pickleball. And we had some of the top pros there as well. A really fun event, raised a lot of money for charity. That's when Gary Vee showed up, and that's when I met him.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He was there. He played on the stream. He played against.
Who was the fourth?
Sherry was there, wasn't he?
A lot of people were there. Yeah, Kyle Yates was there. We had a good selection of pros there.
That video's on YouTube. You can go back and watch it.
You can still watch it. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And by the way, me and Amir Dalich cleaned up on Roddick and Agassi, by the way.
Nice.
To be fair, I don't think they had practiced at all. So it's a little bit unfair. But
well, you got to win over Roddick. You're going to need a little. And he was he retired at that point, or is it right around retirement?
Yeah, he had retired, but not. Okay. But that was a fun event. And we were sponsored by Margaritaville in 2018.
Okay.
The Margaritaville connection was built then, the Gary Vee connection. I told Gary Vee then that someday the sport's going to be big enough where we're going to start a pro league and you're going to invest in it. So I remember telling him that in 2018. I remember telling Andy Roddick that someday more people are going to play pickleball than tennis. He wasn't completely aligned with that at the time.
He wasn't thrilled with that comment.
That someday, I saw the handwriting on the wall. The people that played it were so passionate that, and I knew the numbers were going to continue to go up.
Gotcha.
So that's 2018. I took a few years off of pickleball to spend some time in DC advocating for things that I cared about. And then when I came back from that, I did that for a couple of years. I came back and said, I looked at the pickleball universe and said, are there some things that I could do that would help grow this sport? And started both MLP and Duper around the same time. And
well, when was Dreamland? Was that
so all three of those were about the same time?
Okay. Which is what year?
This was so our first MLP was November of 21.
Yeah.
This planning for this probably started. Yeah, you know, I remember talking to people about MLP at the 2021 event in Delray Beach. When is Delray each year?
March. That was March.
I think. It was March when I committed to doing it. That's when I told people. That was the first time I told anybody about what MLP was and what the plan was. Mm-hmm. So it was March of 2021. And I started Duper around the exact same time.
So did you – initially you had – there were eight teams. Was that the entire funding of the league, was the eight team owners there for that first event?
Yes. So okay. 800,000 a team.
Okay.
Eight teams.
Can I remember?
100,000 a team.
We have options from those.
You still own. You still have equity. You have shares. You don't have options. Well, yeah.
We have to convert them.
Yeah. You convert them, but the strike price is so low.
Question.
It's essentially equity.
The players who participated in the first Major League Pickleball and did not compete in subsequent.
They still own them.
They do?
Of course.
You should have given them a cliff. Come on.
Yeah. Once
you. That's how you would have kept them in.
Damn. Tom's a shark.
Yeah. So the biggest prize money pool in pickleball history was MLP1.
It wasn't the second one in Austin?
Think about what I'm saying.
Prize money.
Okay.
Think about what I'm saying.
Why don't you just tell me? I'm not exactly
you
a
gotta,
thinker.
You gotta tell Thomas some of this stuff. Yeah.
If you look at the value of the options that were granted.
Ah, yeah. Right. So have any play, like, can any of these players look at the current value? Like, are you on Carta or any of these things where they can go log in and see like how their shares have appreciated?
We will be on Carta soon. So right now they cannot do that, but they that will be an option at some point.
Could players, like, let's just say I convince Zane to give me some of his shares. Is he warranted to do that?
There are rules on how you can transfer shares, but I'm not our legal expert on that.
So all right, Zane, we'll have a conversation.
I will defer to the lawyers whether he could sell you some or not. I don't know the answer, to be honest.
And then weren't there incentives to earn more shares, but was that just based on the original draft? Was there anything beyond that?
Well, yeah, the plan at the time was to continue to offer shares to players, but I think obviously plans always change.
And when
it's the Mike Tyson quote. Insert Mike Tyson quote here.
Yeah.
There was a little punch in the face, so the plan kind of changed.
So if you had to guess, if I recall, I think I've got about $1,000 of original MLP shares from November of 2021. What would you guess that is at right now?
I would guess about 16 times that.
Damn.
About $16,000.
All right.
Roughly. Well,
we'll take it.
Based on the recent valuation that came out during that Dude Perfect, it'd be 50 times, wouldn't it?
Well,
but let's just say if you extrapolate that out.
We have extra shares too. That's
you're diluting the players. That's come
well,
unreal. Who is this guy? It's my money. I want it now.
Yeah.
Don't get me singing that song. I love that song.
J.G. Wentworth
song? The J.G. Wentworth song. I love the J.G. Wentworth song.
877 cashed out.
Whoa. We're not sponsored.
Come on, no.
When I worked at a hedge fund, this was a while ago now, that commercial was and we had CNBC on like all the time, and the commercial was on all the time, and I would turn it up every time it was on. Like everybody hated me at the hedge fund. I ran the hedge fund, so I got away with it.
There you go.
But like I used to like absolutely crank the J.G. Wentworth song. I loved it.
When you're the boss.
The opera version is the best one. The opera and the bus version.
You lost me there. I don't like that
I remember
version.
That one.
Well, come on.
I don't
the
like
opera and the
version.
Bus version is clearly
can you best. Give us your best rendition?
No. I don't have that. I don't have that. But the opera and the bus version of the J.G. Wentworth song is clearly the winner.
No objections. I don't know if I'm supposed to object to that.
I missed your freecreditreport.com commercials. Those
not
were
bad. Not
those
bad.
Are pretty good. Not J.G. Wentworth level, but okay. So remembering correctly, there was some hesitancy among some of the players early on with this equity offer. Like, and I think that, you know, what I was looking at when I was a player here is like, you know, this is clearly not going to be a cash flow positive event, and it won't be for a long period of time. I didn't price into that the fact that you grow it and that's a growth industry, right? That you grow it, you're going to lose money for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. How did you deal with pushback on like, this is going to fail. You're not going to make enough money. Like, what? Curious your thoughts on some of the naysayers early on.
There's always naysayers in any startup. There's always going to be naysayers, and this is I still consider MLP a startup company. I don't think we're I think that's the right way to think of where we are. And as often as said, Amazon lost money for the first X years, 10 years, 12 years. I don't even know the right number. There are times when building market share, building your brand is you believe that that will end up in delivering value to your investors. And if you can, yeah, if you can make that case and you can say that the money you've spent is making that more likely to be true in the future, then and the idea is you can, yeah, if all is well, you can raise money at valuations that allow you to continue to do that until some point, yeah, the cows come home. That's what a startup often, that's often the model, and that's, this is no different than that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And yeah, every startup has naysayers, and you have people that believe in the story and people that are skeptical. And yeah, that's the job. That's part of my job, and not just mine, but other people at MLP, is to talk about what we see as the potential of MLP, of the sport in general.
Yeah.
And yeah, and we believe in that.
You know? Can we stick on that? What does MLP look like 3, 5, 10, and 20 years from now?
Well, look, I said that we would have 40 million players, and now I'm shooting for 100 million and a billion worldwide.
Yeah, those are rookie numbers. You got to pump those numbers up. I mean,
wow. I hope they got that on camera. I was doing
the Matthew McConaughey, and I just, ouch.
I hope the camera switched to you in time for that.
So do I. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, blooper reel, or maybe another Zane out of context post.
Yeah.
If those kind of numbers prove to be true, I mean, the sport is going to be worth. Yeah, I said something at South by a few months ago, March, that I think people would someday be a top five watch sport. And I took a decent amount of beating online for saying such a thing. But again, I don't think that's crazy. I think what other sports have that pickleball doesn't have right now is while we have a lot of people who are now playing, we don't have. It's like how many people are playing multiplied by how long they've played. That's the number that needs to go up. In baseball, not that many people play baseball, but the people who've played it or they've cared about it for 50 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that number, pickleball is gaining on that number, and it's gaining quickly, but it's still way behind in terms of that. That's why it's not a top five. If people say if there's 40 million people playing, it's already maybe the most played sport in America, or at least close to it. Why is it the most watched? Because, well, it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And another thing, why do people watch sports? They watch it often with their kids. It's something, if their kids are playing it, they get more interested in it. So I remember when MLS was relatively new. There were a lot of skeptics about MLS at the time when it started. And I looked at the youth soccer numbers and I said, it might take 10 years, but I think it's going to be a success because the kids playing, they're going to want to watch soccer. So I remember when MLS started. I'm old, so I remember all these arguments and debates in sports. It was like, no American's going to go to a game that could end in a 0-0 tie. Like, nobody will ever go to that. And once that happens once, you'll lose your crowd forever. Like, no American will accept that. Mm-hmm. That proved not to be true because if you've watched your son or daughter play soccer, a 0-0 game can be incredibly compelling if you care about the people playing and you care about it can be exciting. Yeah, at the time that was not the consensus. The consensus view is that this wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Americans wouldn't watch it. And I said, once people go watch their kids playing, the youth numbers were huge. They're going to understand that a 0-0 game, if you care about the players and you care about the sport and you understand it a little bit, can be a great game to watch. And that wasn't going to be true. So what pickleball's struggling with is while we have big numbers now, we haven't had big numbers for long. We need times on our side, but also we need big numbers of kids playing. And we have this inverted, if your kids are playing pickleball and then your kids want to watch it, you're going to watch it with your kids. Mm-hmm. You're going to consume more of it. You're going to be talking about it with them more. And this is why the effort in DC and the efforts with Pickleball Cares are incredibly important to the success of the sport. Like we can't have this inversion forever. We need a serious effort to bring kids into this because that will really broaden the appeal of the sport in terms of viewership in terms of everything. It makes everything better while we're making the world a better place and a happier place. That's
sure.
I love win-wins. This is an enormous win-win. And if me and my team in DC can't, with $1 billion in funding the next 2 years, and we can't raise at least $1 billion for this, shame on us. Like we're gonna get this done.
How much conviction do you have? Would you let's just say the Saudi investment fund came and said, "Hey, we'll write you a check." Would you be like, you don't have to answer. I was bringing it up because the live and PGA stuff.
I will actually try to answer that in a reasonably serious way. I don't know. It's an ethically challenging concept. Mm-hmm. I would like, in my ideal world, and I'm not saying that I'm right about this. I'm saying the opposite view has more than a share of merits. But I would love to try and keep politics out of pickleball. That would be my dream. Mm-hmm. Is we don't think about whether a player is from a country that we don't like, and we therefore we can't cheer for them. Like I would like to keep that away. What I've said is, even in 2019,
we can still cheer against Jay, though, right?
Yeah, in 2019,
croissant hands. That's what we call it.
I played hundreds of hours of pickleball with people during that election cycle. Was crazy. Everybody was talking about who you're voting for. I tell people you couldn't stand in a Starbucks line for 5 minutes and not know who everyone in the line was voting for. Mm-hmm. Everybody was talking about it constantly. And I was playing pickleball with people who maybe played 100 hours with, and I couldn't tell you who they voted for. And it was like the one place where it was politics. Sanctuary. It was a sanctuary.
Right.
I'd like – my dream is it stays that way, and we don't think in terms of world politics or domestic – we don't think about it that way. We think about how can we get more people playing the sport in the United States and the world. And, I'd like to keep politics out of it.
Sure.
But, life is complicated.
Yep.
There are people that would have a very strong reason to have a different view, and I would understand their view. I'm not saying they're wrong.
Okay, let's talk about different views, because I know you get plenty of different views. You have what I would say is a very interesting. So you said all startups have naysayers and all startups have growing pains.
Yeah.
You're in a unique circumstance where you have a lot of different investors, and almost all of them, or a high percentage of them, have been successful in their own right.
Yep.
They're winners. They're used to getting their way. And you've got a lot of opinions coming at you. I would say it's the epitome of potentially too many cooks in the kitchen. What's it like navigating all your investors, all the opinions, all the push and pull, while trying to just keep your focus on the North Star, which is growing MLP and growing pickleball overall?
Yeah, it's a great question. It is wonderfully, it's a wonderfully challenging situation that I'm in. I am the biggest shareholder in MLP in Duper. They are merged as one company. I am the chairman of the board. And I hope it's not overly immodest to say that I like to think that I think about the future of the sport probably as much as anybody. How about that? Mm-hmm. With the right amount of modesty. I think about it a lot. And I think that I'm certainly not always right, but I sometimes think I do see some things before other people. Again, not always right. That being said, I mean, our owners are brilliant. Our owners are incredibly talented. A lot of them have, I've never started a sports league before. A lot of them have. A lot of them have that experience that I don't have. Mark Lazary owned the Bucks. He sold it and did financially incredibly well on that. Al Tylas owned DC United. Again, invested early and sold it. Did very well on that. Now owns a team in the Mexican League. Mm-hmm. He owns an Australian basketball team. He owned MLS when it was startup-ish. He owned the Mexican Soccer League when it was startup-ish. He owns a team in the Australian Basketball League when it was startup. And he's been a part of making all of those things successful. Mm-hmm. And would I be foolish not to Yeah. Listen to Al Tylus when he tells me what his opinion of decisions that we're making. Of course, I'd be foolish not to listen to him. So Al is on our board, and yeah. And by the way, Al and I don't always agree. Mm-hmm. I always think that he's brilliant. I always think that he wants the best. And sometimes we'll have a spirited debate, and yeah, we do have a board. I am not I'm not the benevolent. Hopefully, I'm benevolent, but I'm not the dictator. I like to think I'm benevolent. I'm not a dictator. The other voices do matter. Like those matter, and yeah. Look, at times, is that there are times when I wish that wasn't the case. If you I could go to the swear board and do your game, probably add a few swears on those days. Overall, do I think that that's a structure that leads to overall us doing better? I do believe that there are days when I probably would have a choice word or two for what the process. But look, these are incredibly talented group. I've tried to add up kind of like the ridiculousness of the MLP cap table in terms of how many people are financially successful. You know, how many billionaires? How many gold medals, how many Academy Awards, how many Champions League or World Cup finals, like how many Grand Slam tennis titles. All those numbers are absurd. We have an amazing group of people. If myself and the rest of the board were not listening to them, that would not be a very smart thing. So is that a reasonable answer?
Yeah, we'll take it. Sure. If it's the best we're going to get, we'll take it, Steve. is there anybody from that you've gotten to meet as a result of pickleball or an owner of MLP that you're like, holy crap, I never thought I would you know, meet this person? Are you starstruck by anybody?
Well, actually, you asked earlier a question about where I've been traveling to. And I talked about DC, but I didn't talk about another trip I did. I recently did a trip to the UK. I am an almost obsessive fan of the sport, which is huge in the UK and actually really big in China, big in Asia.
I didn't know that.
Called snooker, which is a form of billiards. I think it's like the champagne of billiards, the chess of billiards.
I've never heard of this.
I am obsessed with it.
I'm the emerging sports guy.
I am truly obsessed with snooker, like to the point where the World Championship happens every year in Sheffield, England, at a place called the Crucible Theatre. Mm-hmm. The World Snooker Finals, on average year, have over 100 million people watching the finals. All right, it is enormous in the UK. The 1985 final between Steve Davis and Dennis Taylor is still the highest rated show on BBC history.
Wow. Really? So what actually is the game? Is it? I mean,
it's billiards. It's a form of pool. It's a very large table, and it's incredibly chess-like in its strategy.
Got it. Okay.
It's I find it just incredibly intellectually interesting to watch. Visually, it's beautiful. There's different color ball. I find it like almost like a combination of art and science. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I went on a UK podcast about pickleball because somebody asked me to do it. And I told on that podcast, I talked about my obsessive love for snooker and that 100 million people watch the finals, but the Crucible Theatre holds 800 people. It is the hardest ticket in sports. There are people who've been in the lottery for two decades who've never gotten to go to the Crucible Theater. It's that hard to get a ticket. And I said, if I get, like, it's on my life bucket list to go to the finals at the Crucible Theater. Well, the guy that owns the snooker league is a guy named Barry Hearn, who's a UK billionaire. He started off as a boxing promoter. Then he went to snooker. Now he does this crazy thing called PDC darts. Have you ever seen the European darts where the people are going absolutely crazy?
No, I don't think I have.
This is weird. I just got my haircut yesterday, and in the chair next to me was this guy who just went to a darts championship.
At MSG. At Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and he said it was like the most insane thing he's ever been to. But he said that it was a party, too, and like everybody was hammered. And it was just like.
So Barry Hearn started with boxing promotion, still does that very successfully. snooker. He really created, basically took over in the 70s and made it massive. And now has done this massive success with darts. He heard me on the podcast and invited me to go to the Crucible Finals.
No way.
That's awesome.
And I got to sit in the front row on the Crucible Finals. It was like life bucket list.
All right. That's badass.
And from that trip, I got to spend some time with Barry and talk to him about pickleball. Now, I will say, Barry's 75 years old. He's old school. He's brilliant. He kind of invited me to go as a lark because he heard me on this podcast. And why don't we invite this, this guy to go? Because he said it's a life bucket list. It's kind of a fun story. And he said, I'll spend an hour with him. And we'll talk about pickleball, but I'll amuse him by, I'll give him an hour of my time. Mm-hmm. He ended up spending the entire weekend talking about pickleball. I got him hooked. I think he is going to be someone who could help us bring pickleball to the world.
Yeah.
And that was another trip to the UK. And by the way, go watch some PDC darts. It's what's called the Professional Darts Corporation. It is really, really fun to watch. It's even more fun to go. I went to the Madison Square Garden event.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's ironic.
Go check out some snooker, too.
Yeah.
They're unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, so speaking of like parties at, how you can create a party at a venue and really like enhance the experience that way. Last week at the PPA, there was a bus of what seemed like just like a fraternity, and
you would have thought Thomas was going to be on that bus.
And I think like even if you weren't there, it came through on the stream and made it much more entertaining. The players got into it. Something you guys have been having internal conversations about, you got San Clemente next week. Are you like going to the local colleges and being like, hey, who wants to let's bust in some frat bros?
Beers.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. I wouldn't be shocked if some of our owners did that.
Who would you guess? Which owner is going to do that?
Who's the most likely?
Which owner from SoCal is going to do that?
I'm all for it. I think there was some yelling during the points, and I think that we
too could, much.
Well, look, I don't know. Do we want to go full college tennis? Do we want to go there? You could probably talk me into it, but that's
what do you mean by that?
Well, have you ever been to a college tennis?
No, is it just insane?
So sometimes college, it depends on the conference, correct? Like, so the Big 12 a couple years ago changed where you could just yell whenever the hell you want.
You could yell on their backs, so you could yell at any point. You could do any, there was no rules on what the crowd could do.
Right,
and it's go watch video of a University of Georgia tennis match. It'll blow your mind. Mm-hmm. It's insane. And they are screaming at the other teams and really trying to like make them
upset them.
Oh my God. It's
like, Pablo would not
there
do
for
well.
It. So I'm there for
I've been
it.
I've been a fan of the University of Texas tennis team for a number of years. When they played Baylor at Baylor, it was a trip you had to go to.
Actually, I heard about this match.
It's the Baylor crowd. I mean, they did their research.
Oh, no.
They were digging out stuff on the players' histories.
Right.
Damn. That their parents probably didn't know.
Yeah. I mean,
it was rough. It was insane. Now, do you want to go full college tennis? Do you want people crying on the court?
Yep, I'm there.
All right. I don't know if I'm there.
I am.
I am. I think you're saying like where are you line? Willing for a gimmick to
I don't know.
Sacrifice the respectableness of the sport?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's look at darts. Let's think about that. The darts crowd is completely insane and completely drunk and completely loud and yelling maniacally, but the players are up on a stage where the no one's going to spook them. No one from the crowd's loud enough to spook them. So it doesn't affect play at all. The craziness of the crowd is fun. It's joyful, and it doesn't affect play at all. If that were the case in pickleball, I would say, but it does affect play. If somebody yells right in your backswing,
But I would counter that with it only affects play because we're not used to it.
Right.
In a basketball game, you have people with these things behind the backboard going like this while you're shooting free throws. They're all yelling. They're all screaming.
So you see, I don't know if you saw
but it gets drowned out.
The Leah Jansen podcast with
them. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It feels right. Yeah.
She feels the opposite way. She feels like when you're about to hit a ball, because of the nature of this sport, and she distinguished it from say tennis. Her feeling would not like that.
But she liked, just to clarify her point,
she liked the rowdy crowd.
In between points,
go crazy.
Get loud. During points, you can't be yelling at
those are the lines. Like, I'm all for between points go crazy. I'm not sure. I'm saying this. I'm uncommitted on during points go crazy.
Yeah.
I'm also against, obviously, like, racist or everything, lots of the stuff with that happened before. Obviously, everyone's got to be opposed to that. I think we all agree on that.
Clarify, there's no racism policy.
I hope we all agree on that. Okay, let's all agree on that. That's settled. Go crazy after the point, settled in my view. Go completely crazy during the point. I am of mixed emotions.
Yeah, I mean, because there are a lot of rallies where somebody hits a great shot and then it dribbles over the net and then there's a great get. And it's like the crowd is screaming.
Yeah.
Nothing gets a crowd of old people more riled up than
the ball dribbling over the net.
I'm just going to say it.
No, it's so weird. It's the weirdest thing. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that?
Net cords.
They go ape shit. It's like,
hey, I'm not the only one swearing. let's experiment. So, okay. I won't be playing next Sunday, likely. Just kidding. But if I am watching somebody else's...
Team owners
will
be happy about that one.
I'm just kidding. Hey, we're in a spot where you gotta make fun of yourself. Otherwise, if we take ourselves too seriously, you know, then we're in trouble. If I am watching another match and I am going crazy in the middle of points, somebody makes a great get, and I start yelling, what's going to happen to me next week?
You'd have to ask Brooks.
F around and find out.
Brooks is our commissioner. That would be his call.
Okay.
To be honest, I don't know the answer.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out the answer. We'll find out.
But I love the player stuff.
Yeah. Oh, well, and it creates narratives. It gets people engaged.
When was Warnick and Braverman were on the same team? I mean, it was must watch TV. It was like, I do love that. Now, that's actually another area that it was players going crazy and like getting it. I love that. But my only one I'm not sure about is yelling during the point. That's the only everything else I'm for craziness. I'm pro crazy.
Right.
On everything except for maybe that.
Yeah.
Even that one, I could be persuaded, but I'm not sure I'm persuaded yet.
I just think it's tough to tell people to turn it on and off. You're either riled up or you're not. Like, how do you quiet down for the point? Because tennis crowds do that. They go they erupt during points.
Yeah, tennis crowds do that. They a night match of the U.S. Open, they'll go crazy after the point, but they. You know, in general, they do not yell during the point. And there is I don't know, maybe that's better. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I don't know.
At our Wild West tournament that we continue to talk about and continue to not plan whatsoever, there'll be yelling during points.
There you go.
Experiments. So far our experiments are going to be, we're going to have wider net posts, potentially a men's and women's kitchen. A
2 points for body bag, even though you don't like that one.
But you know what? Why not?
I got to have my
really
one rule.
I don't like that one. That's a bad incentive.
Helmets.
What do you guys know about pickleball?
What are some of the other crazy rules? Spin serves.
What were we going to say? Shot clock.
Shot clock.
And yeah, you got to chirp the other team. You forfeit the match if you're not chirping the other team.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we got to write this down somewhere. But anyway, we're holding it at Dreamland. We just decided now. Thank you for donating the courts.
you're very welcome. Let's go.
But we get to experiment with the shot clock. So, all right. Before we get off topic too much, what's up with Duper these days?
Duper's doing well. If you look at the number of people who are using it, it's growing like crazy. We'll probably have some more public facing news about that soon enough. 35 countries are using Duper now, which is great. We've signed some really big deals with pickleball and tennis authorities throughout the world to use Duper. Probably the biggest news, which I'm breaking today, is our algorithm, which has been in some ways a source of pain to me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It has been, in my view, too complicated, and it's taken too long to update. We have rolled out a new version of the algorithm, which if you put in some results right now, either from a tournament or for a rec, your score changes immediately. I love that.
Oh, wow.
Can you enter, like I do this with my GIN, which is my golf handicap, especially like leading up to, or even like if you don't have a golf handicap and you want to enter a tournament and you need a handicap, you can just go ahead and enter scores like on the spot and it adjusts. Is there any protection against that for people kind of fabricating their ratings?
Here's what we're doing. And this is, I hope people will enjoy this and find it clever and funny, but also really great for the sport. Really great for the sport. If we pull this off as well as I hope to, you're going to have two scores on your Duper. You're going to have your rating, and you're going to have something called a reliability score. About how reliable the score is.
Mm-hmm.
So
just call it the sandbagger score.
Okay, so if all of your scores are from recreational play, and none of them are from tournament play, and they're all with the same partners, in various ways, your reliability score will just be crap. Now, you'll have a Duper rating, but as a tournament organizer, you should look at both and say, there's a certain level of reliability below which I would not accept this person playing in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And for different levels of tournament, that can be different amounts. For a big national tournament with prize money, you should have to have a reasonably high reliability. For a small tournament with $20 entry, who cares?
Yeah. How does your reliability go down by playing with the same players? If people report you?
This is
stuff
I love talking about.
Do you report sandbaggers?
No. Look, it's you're going to love this stuff.
Okay.
I'm like a kid in a candy store with me and the Algo team and the reliability score. Because we're coming up with like clever ways to assess this every day. So... all right. Some of this stuff are probably going to apply for some IP, so please don't steal this, people. But
count that as a patent.
Yeah.
I saw one of our ratings is going to be one of our measures. So you're going to have sub measures under your reliability score that measure different things. So you're not going to have your Duper. You're going to have your overall reliability score, but you're going to have some sub measures that will help a tournament organizer, help someone understand kind of your situation. One of them I call the Kevin Bacon score. How many people have you played against, and how many people have they played against? It's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. How many people are in your web out six generations?
Mm-hmm.
So like if you've played a lot of opponents and they've played a lot of opponents, you're probably more reliable.
Mm-hmm.
If you just played in a group of four, you put all your scores with the same group of four people, always with the same partner, and it's all rec games, you're going to get a low score on your, what I call big game score.
Mm-hmm.
Rec games count less than the big game score than the tournament, and then certain tournaments will even have a higher rating if they're like, big tournaments. So your big game score is going to be low because you're all rec. Your Kevin Bacon score will be low because you're only playing two different partners. You'll have a very low Kevin Bacon score. And you'll have a low swinger score. Your swinger score.
Swinger score.
The swinger score is how many different partners have you had? I knew you'd like that one. I thought I was going to laugh at the Kevin Bacon score. I got nothing. I knew. I was
before safe. Our time. I get the swinger one, though.
You don't know the phrase 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
I'm putting it together,
but it didn't click right away.
You gotta walk us through the jokes.
You gotta put a pineapple.
I always forget I'm a little bit older than some other folks. So
yeah.
I thought the Kevin Bacon line was going to be funny. I thought you were going to get it. Got nothing.
Right.
So I had to pull out the swinger score.
There we go. Now you're talking.
So you have your Kevin Bacon score. You have your swinger score. You have your... big game score, like how often you have your even Steven score, named after me. Yeah, the even Steven score means, are you playing other teams that are evenly matched with you? Because mm-hmm. if you're a 5-0 and you're always playing 4-0s, you don't get you're not getting that great of data out of it. So how?
But
so
this these
you're going to have sub-scores. A series of scores that will. You will have some really clever
but algorithms. But they only affect reliability. They
only affect reliability.
Okay.
Now, in terms of your rating, it's going to be so transparent and immediate. Here's how this is going to work. Okay, say two teams that are both 4-0 play each other. What you're playing for in every match is 0.1 difference in rating. If you win, you're going to be 0.1 higher. And by the way, it's just wins and losses. It's mm-hmm. just we're making it simpler. Mm-hmm. We're taking it back a level. We had tried to get every ounce of data out of a match with every point. Unfortunately, I think that led to more confusion and a longer algorithm and didn't lead to customer satisfaction, in my view. We're gonna take it back.
Interesting. Back to just wins and losses.
Back to just wins and losses. But now, if you're 4-0 playing a 4-0, if you win, you're going to go to 4.05. If you lose, you're going to go to 3.95. Make sense?
Yeah.
You're playing for 0.1. The difference between what you win and lose is 0.1.
Right. Yeah.
If you're a 4-2 playing a 4-0, your difference is going to be 0.1 whether you win or lost, but you're essentially giving odds to the other team. The 4-2, let's say, is a 80% chance to win. 4-2 team against a 4-0 team. If you win as a 4-2 against a 4-0, you go from 4-2 to 4.22. You go 0.02. If you lose, you go down 0.08. You go to 4.12. You're still playing for 0.1, but that difference in ratings affects the odds.
Right.
And we'll calibrate the odds from a 0.1 or a 0.2 difference to the actual results we see in the database, which we've already done. We've calibrated. So there's no advantage or disadvantage from playing up or down. So there's no reason for you to think that playing up or down will affect your duper. You're giving – if you're right. a higher rated team, you're giving odds.
Yeah.
You're only going to go up a little if you win, and you're going to go down a lot if you lose, and vice versa. If you're a lower rated team, you're going to go up a lot if you win. So it's so simple. I can tell you before the match what your rating is going to be before if you win or you lose.
Yeah, right.
It's incredibly transparent. And we're thinking about things in terms of odds. A rating is only good if it helps predict something. A rating is a prediction. If it doesn't predict things well, it's not a very good rating. Mm-hmm. So let's say that for whatever reason, you're really a 4-5 player, but for whatever reason, right now your duper is 4.0. You will very quickly get to 4-5 because you're going to be getting better odds than you should be getting.
Yeah, right.
And your rating will get there. I think in about 10 matches, people will get to almost exactly where they are. And they will stay where they belong, more or less. There'll be some volatility around it. I think the average volatility around your true rating will be like 0.1 or 0.2. And as your reliability goes in, you'll know that for tournament organizers, it's going to be incredible what we're going to be able to deliver. I think it's the end of sandbagging.
Ooh.
I think the end of sandbagging.
That might be a podcast title.
I think it's the end of sandbagging because if a person has a very reliable duper, they would have had to do a lot of work and a lot of ways to get by all the different subscreens that we have. You'd have to do an awful lot of work.
Well, this
don't put it past Neil Matarazzo.
when will you have to do
an awful lot of work for us not to see that? Because you'd have to play against a lot of different players. You have to play with a lot of different partners. You have to play some tournaments. You have to play against teams that are like you'd have to. It's gonna be hard to game it. We're really working on delivering a solution to sandbagging, and I think we've already rolled out the easier rating changes, and it happens immediately. So if you go play a rec game right now, and you put it in, your rating changes right on the spot. Amazing. That was how we did it.
Is it live? Are these updates live?
That part's live.
So that's like
the reliability score stuff is not out on the app yet. Mm-hmm. It's still in the skunk works.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit. I get the name every day. Right away.
My,
right?
My joy is I get the name. I get the swinger score.
Love it. That's very cool. So
this is exciting. Cause I really think it's the end of sandbagging.
And maybe the end of me being a 3-8.
Well, I think you are better than that. Go play some matches, put them in duper. You'll be where you. So here's the analogy I say. is this is very much inspired by chess. I was a good chess player when I was a kid. Actually, a better chess player at age 12 than I am now. I was good at chess. So I've thought about chess ratings for a long time. Chess is exactly the way I organize the system. It's you know exactly what you're playing for. You know before the match if you win, lose, or draw in chess, what your rating will be. And yeah, let's say I'm really a 2,000 level player in chess. That's my true talent. But sometimes you have a run of luck where maybe you're playing at night when you're tired and you're just playing for fun. You're playing speed chess and your rating gets down to 1900. If you're really a 2000, it'll come back up because you'll be getting better odds than you should. It comes right back up. Right. If you had a run of luck where you just like all of a sudden you have a run of games where other people are playing like idiots and you get to 2100, it won't last long if you're really a 2000. You will get back as long as people play enough matches, which is we're going to get back to this concept of how many matches you play with a half-life. A 50-day half-life. So a match 50 days ago counts half as much as a match today. Hmm. A match 100 days ago counts a quarter as much. We're going to have a measure of how many games you've played, the half-life. We're going to have your Kevin Bacon score. We're going to have your swinger score. We're going to have your big game score. We're going to have your even Steven score. And if any of those are out of line, you'll be able to see that this is a person that might be gaming it, and you'll be able to and tournament organizers will have full transparency to this. I think it really will. It'll really be magical.
So you said the 0.40 plays a 4-0. 0.1 is on the line. Does that differ? Is that 0.1 distributed differently based on point differential, or are we doing away with point differential altogether?
Point differential is gone. It's whether you win or lose. Just play more matches.
Yeah.
So here's the analogy I say for chess. Say I'm a 2,000 player, and I play a 2,400, which is like on the edge of Grandmaster. But by the way, if a 2,000 plays a 2,400, they should never, ever win. But I play, and I actually
play. Unless they've got the beads.
Unless they got the anal beads. Unless
they have the count anal. It as a swear.
That's
count
what I was just going to say.
Unless they have the anal beads. Absent sex toy technology, you're probably not going to win.
If you guys have no idea what we're talking about, that's okay.
One of the guys involved in that is now an investor in Major League Pickleball, Magnus Carlsen.
He did not.
He was not the perpetrator.
He was accused of using the beads.
Yeah. It was his opponent. Yeah.
Nor did he ever say anybody. But in any case, now it could look at that match and say, "Yes, Steve, you lost, but you played very well." And that actually, the algorithms in chess now, because AI is so good, they could do that. They could actually look at every move I've made and give me a very accurate rating for that game. But you know what? People actually don't want that. They just want to say, if I won, I go up. If I lose, I go down. You could, using chess technology, give you a much more accurate chess rating very quickly. But actually, people don't want that. Mm-hmm. They don't feel it's fair. They understand that if they win, they go up. If they lose, they go down. And everybody finds their level if they play enough matches.
Yep.
This is the new duper. So that to me is I think people are going to like it better. I hope they do. I think it's easier to understand. It's easier to process, and I think the reliability score is really going to be the secret sauce. We're going to be able to really deliver to a tournament organizer. Not only is this person's duper, but can you reasonably understand that actually is accurate? And that to me is going to be really, really important. So I'm excited about that. I'm like jumping out of my skin excited about it, obviously. Yeah. I think having an accurate rating system is so critical to the sport growing. I want people to play more tournaments. I want them to have more fun at those tournaments. And without an accurate rating system, people talk about sandbagging all the time. There was one of the podcasts. I'm blanking on the.
All the other ones are irrelevant.
Yeah, fair enough. It's still a topic. I think we're not far away from that not being a thing anymore.
Yeah. Well, what I like about it is.
And then, by the way, then we can play for money. We can actually have like amateur tents for money. That's going to be fun. Gambling, not just gambling on the pros, but gambling on your own matches with accurate ratings becomes a thing. That becomes a thing. A lot of things become a thing. We talk about minor league pickleball. It's on the agenda thing to talk about. Like, I think minor league pickleball is the most fun that event in amateur pickleball. You get to pick, you know, you get to go with three of your friends. You get to play teams that are evenly rated with you. And you know, we're excited about ML Plaza. I'm on your team.
Yes.
Which is basically a version of minor league pickleball for the owners of MLP. We're going to be playing that at San Clemente. And I'm telling you, there's been more talk about this and among the owners than the, we debate this more often than any other policy. We're,
but like, you guys are all in agreement that I have the best team.
Well, I'm on your team, so therefore I'm in agreement with
you. You're in agreement for sure. Tim, so, Doug Allen, Jeff Nishi, Steve Kuhn.
I feel good about it.
I do
feel
too.
Good about it. But I'm telling you, all these very successful people, they're like little kids. They're so excited about it. That's the feeling people can get from playing in a minor league pickleball event. And you can play it at any level. We have levels for what we call the duper 12 level, which means you add up all four of your dupers and you got to equal under 12. Mm-hmm. So it's like for 3-0 players. Duper 14 for 3.5 players. Add up all four of them. Got to be under. Doesn't matter what level you are. You don't have to be a pro player. You can go and play now with three of your friends. You're going to have an amazing weekend. You get a welcome party. You get music on Saturday. You get a lot of play, but not too much. And you get to, when you're not playing, you're cheering for your teammates. It is, I think, the most fun experience in pickleball. And we're being super aggressive in rolling this out all over the country. We're going to be doing hundreds, if not thousands, of minor league events this year. And we're going to go higher from there. It's, to me, without an accurate rating, it kind of loses the point. Because then a duper 16 level, which is for average 4-0 players, if there's huge differences in teams because they're sandbagging, that brings a lot of the joy out of it. You're going to know that it's going to be fair.
I like it because the number means the same thing regardless of whether you're 2 years old or 100 years old. Like it sucks for people that say like, hey, we played an open division. We played 4-0 and these guys are 60 and they're playing against a 19-year-old who's a 4-0, which 4-0 should mean the same thing. But clearly that isn't because it's a problem.
Yeah. And it also means the same thing in Australia as it does in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's enough connectivity, enough people from Australia have come over and played, and vice versa to some extent, mostly the other way, but that we have connectivity to the UK, to Australia. It's the same thing. And mm-hmm. that's really cool for the sport. That's a big thing for the sport.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. How about your newest pickleball venture? You want to tell us a little bit about that? The press release is out. It's not like we're saying anything. It's not like we're saying anything out of hand.
Me and a group of folks have partnered with the amazing folks at Simon Properties, which is the biggest shopping mall developer in the United States, to develop a lot of the empty big boxes. The Bed Bath and Beyonds of the world that are no longer with us. We're going to try and develop a lot of those into indoor pickleball venues. And we call this, Pickle Mall is the name of the company.
The goat of naming. The goat of naming stuff. The goat. The Pickle Mall. Okay. Pickle Mall. We discussed it briefly on the podcast a little bit ago. But how'd this come to be? Yeah. Like, what's the idea behind it? How'd you decide, all right, I'm not busy enough with Dreamland Duper, Major League Pickleball, my lobbying efforts, playing pickleball. I need to fill my time up with Pickle Mall.
I'm on a company board with one of the top executives of Simon Properties. And one day after a board meeting, we had dinner and I said, what do you think of this idea? And he was, that's super interesting. Because if you think about it from a shopping mall perspective. When a big box goes empty, all the other tenants get a little bit nervous. Nobody likes that. And what do they want to come in? They want something to come into that space that's experiential, that's bringing new people to the mall, and doesn't take away from their business. And this is what Pickle Mall is. It's going to be pretty simple. It's there for people who want to play pickleball. It's going to be Not that there's anything wrong with chicken and pickle or pickle and chili. It is not a food and beverage concept. Those are great. I'm not saying those are bad things. It's just not what we are. we're a place where you go and play pickleball. So we're not taking money away from the food court. We're not taking, we're bringing people to the mall. We're bringing them there at various hours when sometimes the mall isn't that busy. And we're letting the rest of the mall shops have their business doing their business. And that's exactly what the tenants of the mall want. And I think we can deliver that. I think it's a super exciting partnership.
So this almost seems like it could be in slight conflict with some of your lobbying efforts. Like if politicians are adding courts left and right, what is pickleball?
I completely disagree with that.
Okay. I'm curious. Tell me why.
But thank you for saying it. It's funny because I remember when I opened Dreamland, we now have 16 courts at Dreamland. A couple of people said to me, what if Dripping Springs, which is where Dreamland is, a city outside of Austin, what if they opened like 50 public courts? Wouldn't you be dead? I'm like, that would be great because more people are going to try it. And they're going to come to Dreamland for our programming, for to come and play in a minor league event. I think the more people we get playing, the more courts we get built, that'll be a bigger success for pickleball. I don't think it's a conflict at all. I don't think if Chicken and Pickle opened next to me in a pickleball, I would say great. I love it. Because they're really top of funnel. They're getting people to come in there who probably had never played before. You know, most of the people at Chicken Pickle are renting a paddle. I don't think most of the people at Pickleball will be renting a paddle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're going to be bringing their paddle. They're going to bring in their group. They're going to be playing serious pickleball. I think that's going to be our core customer. I love Chicken and Pickle next door. I would love if they opened public courts next door. I think that's great for our business. Because I think at some point, as you get more serious, at some point, you kind of want indoor. At least, certainly, look, yeah, it's starting to get hot here in Austin. Mm-hmm. It was hot, certainly hot at the Dallas.
I was playing at 5 yesterday, and it was insane.
And
it's not even the peak.
Yeah, and you're young and in shape, and I'm older and more fat than I wish I was. Yeah, it's as bad as it is for you, to think about it. So it's worse for me. So I think... I hope we build millions of public courts. I hope we build a lot of them. I don't think that hurts pickleball. I think it actually would make it more valuable. And we need to just get more people playing. And then I think the logo or motto of pickleball is the future of pickleball is indoors. I actually think the future of pickleball is indoors. Major events are going to want to be indoors. Because it's just healthier and better and more secure that you're actually going to have the event. People are traveling. They're buying a hotel room. They're buying a plane ticket. They want to make sure the event's going to happen.
Yeah, but you can buy the weather policy.
Yeah, but the weather policy doesn't...
I was being facetious.
Yeah. It doesn't give you your time back.
Very cool. I'm excited. When's the first one?
You didn't get my Kevin Bacon joke. I didn't get yours. That were you.
When's the first one opening?
In July in Tempe, Arizona.
Okay. And what's the grand scope?
I hope we can scale this very quickly. I don't think there's a shortage. I don't think there's a lack of demand for indoor pickleball courts. I can't think of one market where there's too many indoor pickleball courts. Tell me what market that is, and I won't go there. I don't know what that market is. If I can find the right location, the important things, we got to have good ceiling heights. You got to have level floors, concrete floors that make sense, and you have to have the column widths the right. Those are the things. If those things make sense, I think we could work. This could work in a lot of communities in America. I don't think there's a single city I can think of that has too many indoor pickleball courts. I don't know what. Maybe someday, but I don't think that day is today.
Fair.
Anything else, Mr. Navratil?
On that, we have, I don't know if we have the SAN questions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So these were the questions that were submitted. We raised $75 from donations this week.
Nice.
Weak stuff. I am swearing away over here for Alzheimer's research, and you guys can't raise more than... Step it up, crew. We've got Steve here. Ask him whatever the heck you want. And we got $75. We can do better, guys. We can do better. But anyway, good cause. Thank you to those guys that did donate. The first question is from our boy Dinky McDinkmaster. Steve, how long do you think it will be before pickleball becomes an official NCAA sport? Seems like it's an easy Title IX friendly sport. What would need to happen to see this become reality?
Binky, thank you for the question. I think it's a great question. As usual, I will give my usual optimistic. I think this makes a lot of sense as an NCAA sport. It's like it'll be the first co-ed NCAA sport. I think it's a fun story and a positive one. I don't think the cost for colleges and universities to implement it is very low. We have worst case, you're restriping your tennis courts. It doesn't cost much. It's a great story. And I also think your alumni are going to care. Yeah. If Ohio State plays Michigan at pickleball, people are going to care. If Texas plays Oklahoma at pickleball, people are going to care. Your alumni are going to want you to win. And therefore, if your alumni want you to win, it's going to be a varsity sport. So I don't want to put a number on it, because then if we don't achieve that, it would feel like a failure. But I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that this can happen fast, because I think it's a feel-good story. Yeah. Feel-good story for the NCAA. It's a feel-good story for everybody. And, college pickleball, we haven't talked about. We've had the college national championship last year. University of North Carolina won it. We have 12 regional championships this year through Duper and a national championship. We are really investing in that as well. And our goal in doing that is to show the NCAA and other organizations that there is something here. And I think we're having success in doing that. So
yeah.
I'm super fired up about that.
It just feels like such a no-brainer.
If there was like a Texas-Oklahoma game at Dreamland, tell me you wouldn't want to go.
That'd be wild.
I also,
as long as we could chirp.
You could definitely chirp. You could bring each school gets to bring one frat. How about that? One frat per school.
Only one?
Yeah. Send your top frat. All right, next one. Are you aware of any discussions started of getting into Texas high schools?
I think college will come first, because if we can say this is a college thing, especially if there's scholarships, then high schools will come. Kids camps will come. Yeah. For the players, this would be amazing. This would be a ways for players to be able to, I know you've had a great camp business at various times and still do. This is
so important. Yeah, but I'm not allowed near schools. So that's
it's so important for everyone that we do this. And college is going to lead. If you look at beach volleyball became an NCAA varsity sport, and all of a sudden there were high school and youth camps everywhere, because the idea of that this is a way now that you could advance, you could get a college scholarship, it really grew the sport at the youth level fantastically. If we can get, I think college will be first, but I'll tell you what, if there was a Texas high school pickleball championship at Dreamland, tell me you wouldn't want to go watch it.
That'd be sick. It could be like the Minnesota high school hockey championships.
I would want to go watch that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be compelling stuff. There would be some great story of like, and maybe some really small school could win, because it's only four players. It wouldn't take, it could be like some tiny school and Waxahachie or whatever, it could come out of nowhere and beat Westlake. Yeah.
Do we do all the questions for?
We have one more.
Right.
Do you foresee a PGA/LIV type merger between the APP, PPA, MLP, USAP? It seems like having this many entities may hurt the future development of professional pickleball.
All things are possible. I the crystal ball here is fuzzy. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to know. I do think that would be something I would certainly be open to. I'm not opposed to it. I think that's, we'll see. We'll just have to see how that goes. I think it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, thank you guys for your donations to Stop Alzheimer's Now. Remember, you can ask Thomas or myself. I don't know if we have nailed down a guest for next week, but you can ask us whatever question you want. We will air it on the pod next week, and it's a $5 minimum donation to Stop Alzheimer's Now, and that's all the things there. So thank you.
That is that the end of the pod too?
I didn't say that. That's the end of this segment. I don't know. You got other stuff to talk about?
No, we probably have to wrap. But one question I would ask is there a point where we get to sort of, you know, teams are established enough where we are doing like home and away matches. Each individual team has their own venue.
I would love to get there. I think that is
long-term plan.
Long-term plan. But yeah. we'll see what fate allows us to do. But I would love that. I think that would be another level of fan craziness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then they bring in all the frats.
And we yell during points.
It would be a different level of intensity, I think. Yeah, I think about some of the matches we've had. Remember that, yeah, the Mesa match between the Fives and
Hustlers?
And the Hustlers.
Yeah.
If that were either in New York or in New Jersey, could you imagine that crowd?
Yeah.
If that would have happened at a home match, it would have been some of the best content ever. I mean, it was great content as it was. If that was in front of a home crowd with people going absolutely ape shit, there we go.
Bring it up.
I saw it coming, but I said, all right, I'm in. $400 I'm in $400. If that would be insane. So yeah. I want to get there.
Cool. I like it. I think we can end on that.
Let's do it.
Thanks for coming, Steve. We'll see you in San Clemente next week.
I love it. It's good. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, Tyler has fun.